This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Nicola Hood took office as Bexar County District Attorney on January 1st, 2015, after defeating 16-year incumbent Republican Susan Reed. Now he'll be succeeded by Joe Gonzalez at the beginning of 2019, this coming January 1st. How is that transition working? What does LaHood see as the big wins of his term? And what are his plans for the future? We're going to be asking those questions to District Attorney Nicola LaHood. You can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org, and you can tweet at us at tprsource. And we're joined this afternoon with Nicola LaHood here in the studio. District Attorney LaHood, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
So there's a lot of stories in the media right now that we really want to get your input on.
Sure.
One of them would be this Gabriel Moreno case. He is an alleged member of the Mexican Mafia. He was recently found not guilty. And there's been some write-ups about that case saying maybe that there was some issues with how he was charged or how the case was presented in the court. And they're wondering what happened with the district attorney's office on that.
Well, the thing is, with our office, we have to take the cases the way we get them. We don't get to make the evidence. We're not the initiating agency. That's law enforcement. We're the reviewing agency and the prosecutorial agency. So we don't get to make our own evidence. We have to deal with it. We don't make our own witnesses. We have to deal with witnesses. What Joe or anybody else would find out and are going to find out is very difficult dealing with people that engage in criminal activity, obviously, and when they become your witnesses, it makes your case harder. Just because a case is hard to try to prove, that doesn't mean we don't try the case if we believe that justice calls for it. You're supposed to try hard cases. You don't just take the easy cases. The analogy I give people, it's like a surgeon that says, if it's not an easy surgery, I don't want to do it. Well, then a lot of people are going to get in trouble and be sick and pass away. And so it's no different with us. So the prosecutors in that case were experienced prosecutors. They've done very good work for the citizens of Bexar County, and they did the best they could with this case with the evidence that we had.
So what I don't understand is there was a lot written about this, why did the judge have to put the prosecutor on the stand?
There was obviously some question with evidence. I mean, I was not the prosecutor handling the case, obviously. I was briefed on it after, especially at this late stage in this administration. But there was a question about evidence. The prosecutor or a defense attorney could be placed on the stand for any particular purpose. There was no finding from it, from my understanding. And so that's something that the judge felt that needed to be done, and he did it.
And the case, you know, this is an individual. He's in the criminal world. It looks like he's got a record.
Right.
He's involved with the Mexican Mafia. And this is a typical, a very gruesome murder.
Right.
The individual that he killed, there was a drug dealer who was killed.
Mm-hmm.
He was chopped up and put on a barbecue pit. It was really horrible. And there was another case where they were able, your office was able to get a conviction
and a life sentence.
Yeah. So, Gabriel Moreno had a public defender, and he was able to get an acquittal. And many people thought this was a case that it would be very unusual to get an acquittal in a case like this.
Well, when you say many people, who are those people? Number one. Number two, what makes them say that opinion? Again, it's real easy to criticize from outside when you're in the trenches dealing with the evidence and dealing with the witnesses and dealing with the dynamics and all the moving parts on these complex cases and these cases that deal with people that are intimidating. Right. I mean, that's a reality. And this individual obviously doesn't look like you for sure or anybody else.
Well, he's tatted up.
Right. In the face and everywhere else. And he's got an interesting record. I don't know exactly how much of that was admitted before the jury. And maybe it wasn't at the time. And it probably shouldn't have been. But I'm just saying there's a lot of different factors we deal with, from witnesses to intimidation of witnesses to evidence to how the investigation was handled initially. It's oftentimes that we have a stronger case against one co-defendant than another. That's just typical. Anybody in the justice system for any amount of time will know that. And this is one of those examples. It's not a case that the prosecutors that evaluated the case felt should have been dismissed. Justice called for a trial before members and peers in this community, and we did it. That's the way the system works.
So you said Joe earlier, and I think
sure.
you're alluding to Joe Gonzalez, who's the incoming district attorney, and he was quoted as maybe saying he's going to take a look at this case.
Yeah. For what? I don't know. I mean, I wish he was here today. Here's the problem, and I'm going to say this humbly, but just very matter of fact. If somebody wants to accomplish having the tallest building in the area, there's two ways to accomplish it. Number one, you either work your ass off, put the time in, and take reasonable risk, and you try to build the tallest building. Or the second way to do it is you knock down all the other buildings around you, and then all of a sudden you're the tallest building. In my humble opinion, that's what he's doing. I mean, he's trying to find things to criticize so he can come in like he's the savior. And with all due respect, it's just not going to be that way. I wish him well. He's going to have a rude awakening on what he's going to have to deal with all the different dynamics and agencies and special interest groups and people putting pressure and citizens accused and trying to find justice. And it's going to be interesting for him. I hope he does well doing it. It matters to my kids and to this community because I plan to be here for as long as the Lord leaves me on this earth. But it's just very easy to criticize, and then not even with all the information needed to make a proper analysis to make yourself look like you're the savior. And unfortunately, that's just not the case.
So is there room for being able to charge Moreno on other charges like aggravated kidnapping or something like that?
There's always, if the evidence supports it, there's not, if as long as it doesn't fall within double jeopardy, that there's a case that there's a lesser included charge that this would not include, then yes, there's always, and he's being held on another case right now, so he's not out in the public, and so the prosecutors are still going to do their job and work hard to hold people accountable for things that we believe they did wrong.
Some people have said that because the clock is running out on your tenure at the office, and you've lost some of your prosecutors, or you know they've a couple of top ones, haven't they left your office?
Well, I haven't lost any of them. Joe has released 26 of them, so that's not me. I have not released anybody. He has not rehired them, so I can't. You'll have to ask him why he released 11 of 37 first chairs and 26 very very experienced prosecutors overall that were serving the citizens of Bexar County before I was even DA, and I kept them. For whatever reason, he's not. So that's a question for him.
So a talent has not been rehired.
I believe he's let go of a lot of talented prosecutors. I do, in my opinion.
Okay. Do you think that may have had an impact on this case?
Oh, no. The prosecutors that were handling this case were here. They weren't released, and they were analyzing it themselves.
So why do you think that when you came into office, you changed, you know, some talent left then as well?
I don't think I can look at the numbers. I kept most of the people that were Ms. Reed's top echelon left on their own because they were just in with her the whole time. And I understand that. And I understand some releases. Don't get me wrong. I want to be fair to Joe also. I get some of them. But I kept people that were openly campaigning against me. I mean, they were openly advocating against me. And I humbled myself and I made a promise to God and the community that it wasn't about me. It was about them. And so I said, I'll give them 6 months to buy into the culture, to look at my leadership style and see if they can, you know, follow that. And I'm proud and humbled to say that out of the people that I had on that watch list, I didn't end up releasing any of them. And they became very good prosecutors, loyal to the office and to the administration and to the culture that we established.
Nicola Hood is in the studio this afternoon here on The Source. You can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Talking about some of the cases that are before the office. We're going to hear about Janine Jones, the killer nurse. What's going to happen with that case? There are a lot of questions about what will happen in the new administration on that. Also, what's next for Nicola Hood? Does he still have a future in politics? Got a question? Call in 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Nicola Hood, the Bexar County District Attorney, is in the studio. If you've got a question or a comment, the number is 210-614-8980. Recently, we had the DA-elect in the studio, Joe Gonzalez, asked him about the Janine Jones case, and he said that he will take a look at it, but he is unsure on whether or not they will actually move forward on a prosecution on that. I wanted to get your comments, Nicola Hood.
That is a shocking statement. That is a shocking statement. And it's a concern for the families involved and all the people that have worked hard on this case, including the prosecutors and investigators and all the different people. I mean, we have 5 new indictments. We wouldn't have gone forward with them if we didn't have the evidence to back it up. Is it a more challenging case than a case that happened last year? Of course. The investigative techniques were different. Evidence was challenging, but there was a lot of hard work done in that case. And those cases were presented to a grand jury, and they came back with a true bill of indictment for a reason.
Janine Jones, listeners may not know, she was a nurse working in San Antonio and then in Kerrville. She is alleged to have murdered up to 60 children here locally. Many families still mourn the loss of those infants. This happened in the 70s and the 80s, but they say trying to get these other convictions, because she was being released on a mandatory parole. She's now in custody at Bexar County, at the jail. But is it possible she could walk free?
If Joe dismisses the cases, she will be out in our community. She was going to be released March 1st or April. I think it was March 1st.
Yeah, it was March 1st.
It was an old parole law that had been grandfathered in at the time of her conviction. She was convicted in Kerrville of murdering a child. She was convicted of injury to a child causing serious bodily injury here. The judge at the time ran them concurrent instead of stacked them. So she was going to be released. And previous DAs before said there was nothing that could be done. We assigned a special unit led by the prosecutor, Jason Goss, and worked his butt off with investigator Larry, that had been working on this case since Ms. Reed's administration, presented evidence to a grand jury, and the juries came back with true bills of indictments for a reason. So for him to say a statement like that, I think, is, with all due respect, irresponsible without having to look at the evidence. Is it going to be tough? There's a lot of boxes to do that. What I'll even offer to him now is Jason, myself, and Jay, another prosecutor, Jay Norton, that worked on the case and is one of the lead prosecutors, will come in as special prosecutors under Joe's administration, answer to him, and prosecute those cases. If he doesn't think he can handle them, we'll prosecute those cases.
That is a very unusual, and that is a massive offer.
It's not about me. It's about justice. It's about these families. And you know that my family has experienced murder. My brother was murdered in my parents' driveway on August 15th, 1996, and we walked out 4 minutes later, literally. I understand the new normal. You never, quote-unquote, get over it. Do you find peace? You can find peace. For us, it was, in our faith and then over time. But justice calls for it. We believe that this woman should not be released into any community, and it matters to the citizens of Bexar County. I'm not going to be the DA again. I will humble myself and answer to Joe, and so will Jason and Jay as a special prosecutor versus a pro temp. A pro temp prosecutor is appointed when there's a conflict of interest, and that means the pro temp becomes a DA on that particular case. There's no conflict in this case with Joe that I can see, so we would be special prosecutors working under his administration and his final decision, but we'll handle that case because no one knows the cases like Jason does and Jay.
But it's going to be a tough case. I mean, stepping up to take this case, I mean, it's not even – it's questionable if you can even prove there was actually a murder. I mean, the bodies are decomposed. The paperwork is gone. The witnesses are very few. They don't know how do you even build this case?
I'm not going to try this case in the court of public opinion. All I can tell you is we didn't present conjecture to the grand jury. We presented evidence, because that's what you're supposed to do. We presented a theory backed up by evidence, and we can't talk about what that was. We're not allowed to in the statute. And they came back with true bills of indictment, not on one indictment, on five. And so we're prepared to try those cases. Jason and Jay have worked it up. I've been briefed on those cases. I will be prepared as well. And the offer stands. We will try those cases as special prosecutor if Joe doesn't think he can handle them.
Joe Gonzalez said that your office has been very cooperative in the transition.
Well, it matters. Look, I mean, no disrespect to my predecessor, it wasn't that way with us. And I didn't want to do that, regardless of my personal feelings or what I think or my opinions. This is about the citizens of Bexar County, and it matters how that office is run. And so we wanted a smooth transition. January 2nd, judges aren't going to care that Joe's the brand new DA. Nobody cared when I was. I mean, there were cases that have been on the docket. There are citizens accused that have been waiting for their due process in court. And there's victims that want their day in court also, and prosecutors are ready to go, regardless of who the administration is. And so I gave the marching orders a while back that cooperate as much as possible, make sure that it's a smooth transition so Joe can pick up and run January 1.
On January 1, it's not just a new district attorney, but we have 15 new judges, also a new district clerk, a county clerk. What's your prediction? You're no longer going to have to work at the courthouse as an office holder. You may have to be there as a lawyer. But what do you think is going to happen with all these changes?
There's always some growing pains. I hope and pray that all those people kept some people, excuse me, with institutional knowledge of the position. There's no way to know how to do something exactly unless you do it. And so there's going to be a learning curve, but if you have the right people around you, that transition can be much easier.
So you have recently said that you are, if you run for office again, you would be running as a Republican.
I don't know if I said that. I said I wouldn't run as a Democrat, right? Okay. And so that is true. I never planned on running the first time. And so I, like I've always said, whether people understand this or not, I answered a calling. I believe it was public service. I was blessed with a very good private practice before. I spent less time with my kids as DA. I missed way too many bedtimes and homework times, and I did not get a pay raise. So I was doing it for sincere reasons, and I'm honored to have served, and I don't regret a second of it. I don't plan to run again. I mean, I'm excited and looking forward to this next season in my life and going back into private practice, and I've already been spending more time with my kids and family. So, but I will, if I believe the situation calls for it, I will answer the call.
Some people, we like to sit around and we float, who's going to run for mayor? Mm-hmm. And your name has popped up. Are you considering a run for mayor?
I am not. Number one, I don't live in the city. I live in the county. So that's an easy answer. Number two, we don't have a strong mayoral government. It's city manager government. And so I don't know what, other than a figurehead, with all due respect, I just don't have that interest. I really want to focus on my family again, and I have been doing that. My wife supports whatever decision I make. I would not make any decision without her blessing and green light. But I do see myself serving at some point in the future. I just don't know in what capacity, and I don't know the timing of it.
So Ryan on Twitter asked, what is next for you?
We'll be starting a firm, a private practice, January 1, criminal defense, specializing in criminal defense, both state and federal. And we'll be doing some PI work, personal injury work, and then also some civil matters.
On this case that people have been writing about recently about James Preston Green, about how he has a serial DWI offender, yet he was they're alleging that he's getting preferential treatment because maybe a connection that his father has with you.
Yeah, there's just nothing to that. I can't overanswer that question enough times. I believe his daddy had attended my Bible study a number of times, and I do know his pop. I was not aware of that case. We spoke to the handling prosecutor of what her decision was in going into it, myself and the division chief, because I did not know and I did not approve that plea. In retrospect, looking at the plea, and I, as a professional, and I'm less looking at the reasoning and the cases pending, I would not have approved that plea. There's 200 prosecutors in that office. There's no way you can micromanage 200 prosecutors, nor should you. If that was going to be the case, then whoever's in charge should just handle all, 50,000 plus cases themselves. And there's just no way to do that. So when the case was brought to my attention, I reviewed it. The plea had already been done. It wasn't something that either the division chief nor myself had approved nor would have approved. But the handling prosecutor, we believe that she's being sincere, and when she gave the logic and the reasoning of what she was doing, and whether we agree or not, it already happened. And so we would not have approved that.
But the judge, was it Judge Rangel?
I believe it was Rangel.
He went along with that. Is it typical? I mean, a judge can override these deals.
A judge can, I mean, just in general, let's talk in general. A judge can always, what they call, bust a plea, can break the plea deal, and then you start all over again, sure. I can tell you typically the judges won't, if there's an agreement or a recommendation from the state, they typically won't, because their assumption, and it's a reasonable assumption, is that the state of Texas or the governmental agency has reviewed and knows the case better than they do. And so if it's recommended, it's for a reason. So I don't think anybody should be overly harsh on Judge Rangel. It was recommended by the state, so I can see why he approved it.
The prosecutor in the case, did they know that there was a connection between the Green family and yours? Apparently, James Preston Green was throwing your name around during the arrest, saying that he knew you.
Yeah.
Could that have influenced things? Should that, if that becomes to light, shouldn't they automatically go to you and tell you what's happening, or not?
Well, I don't know. I just another news station told me that yesterday. I mean, I had no idea that, I guess on the video you're referring to, right?
Yeah.
He had threw my name. Believe it or not, that's happened a number of times, and people are going to do it to the incoming DA as well.
Because even if they don't even know who you are.
They don't even know you, or they know a friend of a friend, or it's your dog, peed in their yard, and so they know you. So it's going to happen to Joe as well, because he was in private practice for 25 years, and you can't just get off a case just because of that. But I just found that out yesterday. But I would not have approved this deal, so I just can't overtalk that situation. I just wasn't aware of this until after.
So when you came into office, a lot of hope, a lot of, you know, people were, you know, we got a new DA in town, a lot of promises, a lot of things you followed up on. Yeah. But somehow you got off into a bad foot with the local press.
Well, not the local press, because you're part of the press and you and I get along great. The Express News and one of their so-called opinion writers, I think, is a very dishonest person. That's my opinion, and I think I can prove that. So, you know, I'm not going to tell people what they want to hear, my man. You know, I've always just spoke my mind. I do it as humbly as I can. I always try to back up my words with facts and evidence. That's what people of honor do. And I'll answer. I've made myself available to you and everybody. The only cases I don't talk about is when there's a case pending that I don't want to try in the case in the court of public opinion, because it's not right, not only for the system, but it's not right for the citizen accused. You can't piecemeal evidence and only show what you want to show. You got to have a process and protect the justice system, and I have. But to say that I got off on a bad foot, whether they got off with me or I with them, I just wasn't going to be a puppet for them, and I don't. Frankly, I don't respect that magazine article newspaper thing that we have here anyway.
What advice do you have for Joe Gonzalez?
I mean, just be consistent, you know, always seek justice. I mean, and I know it sounds funny that way. Have good people around you. Take advice from people. I believe that wisdom is found in the counsel of many. Get advice, you know, not the counsel of one, many. And be prepared for the criticism, because there's going to be a little love affair here for the first 3 months.
A little honeymoon.
As soon as it's over and then, you know, you start going to the bathroom and leaving your underwear on the floor and not closing the refrigerator, there's going to be criticism. And the advice to Joe, and I say this sincerely, is don't try to keep everybody happy, because you can't. There's just no way. If you're trying to keep everybody happy, you're not doing your job. Lady Justice wears a blindfold. She doesn't care about politics. I hope to God that Joe keeps politics out of the DA's office. It has no business there. I mean, you know, Democrat, Republican, partisan stuff. And do what's right. You know, support law enforcement. Hold them accountable when they do something wrong, like we do with our law enforcement integrity unit. And do what's right by people. And don't be afraid. What I would tell Joe is don't be afraid. You can't be afraid to make a decision. A paranoid DA gets nothing done. And then why even be the DA? You signed up to make tough decisions. Be humble, be moral about it, and make tough decisions.
So he's running, he ran and he won on this position of being sensitive to the vulnerable population, the poor and the victimized and these other things, but still working to keep the community safe. Is that going to work?
I don't even know what that means, to be honest with you. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, I'm in first ever in Bexar County Conviction Integrity Unit. I mean, we've helped exonerate people. The Texas 4 was one of them. I mean, so I'm proud of that work and all the other work. I mean, there was a bunch of stuff that we all did together. I'll never say me. It's we as a collective office. I couldn't have done it by myself.
Well, when we had a woman die in the Bexar County Jail on Friday. She'd been held for the last, since July, on an $800 bond for trespassing, waiting psych evaluation. It's like, I mean, they say she should never have been there.
Well, I don't know the case yet, so I'd have to look in it, so I don't want to speak ignorantly, but if there's a psych evaluation, there's a glitch in the system for her to get it. Nobody gets held on an $800 bond in Bexar County. The PR bond would have been, when I was a magistrate judge, you just gave a PR bond, even on felony cases that were nonviolent. So she was, sounds like, and I don't know because I haven't seen this case, she sounds like she was being held on that psych eval, so that part of the system needs to be worked on, but that's not the DA's office.
That's the sheriff's office.
And that could be the sheriff's office, but it could be also some of the doctors.
We're out of time here. Nico LaHood, Bexar County District Attorney, thank you so much for stopping by this afternoon.
Merry Christmas, my man.
Merry Christmas to you, sir. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. When we come back from the break, we're going to hear from Pedro Martinez, SAISD Superintendent. Stay tuned.